Chapter 4. Owen. Dawn arrives in the Emberwood, looking much as it had when I was an apprentice filled with dreams of one day becoming a ranger. Those were simpler times, I think, watching the glistening ice reflect the orange hues of the rising sun. It already seems like so long ago. The light brings with it a sense of urgency, a reminder of the looming war and all the things we must do to prepare for it. Even so, I allow myself to sit and enjoy the stunning brilliance of the new day. Despite the weight of responsibility in the back of my mind, I feel a measure of peace, the tranquility of the forest calming my troubled heart while the rest of the camp slumbers. How many more of these sunrises are left for me to watch, I wonder, blowing air into my cold hands. Will the Ralar take even the sun away from us? When we began our trek into the Emberwood, we outpaced the clouds that had covered the wastes following the Ark's demise. As if waiting to move into Tarsinium, they continue to linger just beyond the borders of the kingdom. I have a feeling that once the demonic armies begin their invasion, the black clouds will follow. I turn back to the work at hand, whittling a piece of oak I'd found during the night. It's mostly shapeless, a small lump about the size of a river stone. But in my mind's eye, I know exactly what it will be, my makeshift knife working slowly to fashion it into a thing of beauty. A tree branch snaps and my muscles tense involuntarily. I put away the bit of wood and raise the quill dagger warily, my eyes searching. A stag steps onto the wintry scene before me, its head emerging from a dense thicket, leaves and branches encircled above him like a gaudy antlered crown. It moves into the clearing and nuzzles the forest floor, searching for food amid the snow, but doesn't seem to notice my presence on the nearby rock where I'm perched. Its body, muscular and proud, moves with an easy grace as it peruses the meadow, its hooves leaving cloven track marks in its wake. Slowly, I reach for my bow, drawing an arrow from my quiver and knocking it to the string. That much meat would go a long way in feeding our beleaguered caravan. I aim down the shaft, but I can't help but think of the stag I'd slain over the summer, as well as the carnage the Darkhound had wrought on the rest of the herd. As I crouch, hesitating with the arrow drawn, the stag looks up, noticing me for the first time. My breath catches in my throat, and for a long moment we stare at each other, the silence of the forest closing in around us. "Run," I think, regarding its unwavering black eyes. "Can't you see that I can kill you?" The beast remains still as a statue, reposed in the golden light, waiting to see what I'll do. Frowning, I lower my bow, easing the tension of the string. The stag holds my gaze a moment longer as if considering whether I'm still a threat, then turns and walks back into the thicket, disappearing from sight. I stare after it, holding my position for a long time before finally putting away my bow and arrow. Straightening, I turn my attention back to the rising sun, a strange occurrence playing over in my head. Somehow, it didn't feel right killing such a majestic creature. Not after everything that's happened. Not with everything that's coming. The feeling of serenity passes as the first inhabitants of the camp begin to stir. Sighing, I stroke the nearby fire to life, sending wisps of smoke drifting lazily into the air. Within the hour, most of the camp has awakened and begun the process of breaking down camp. Rations of boiled grains are cooked over the fire pits while everyone prepares themselves for what we all know will be another grueling day of walking. Zara emerges from her tent looking cheerful after a night of sleep. Yet she appears to still carry the lingering effects of the past day's exertions, dark circles ringing her eyes. "Good morning," she says, a smile on her face. "How did you sleep?"
"Well enough," I reply around a mouthful of food. "I miss sleeping under the trees."
She sniffs. "You're a terrible liar, you know that? You look exhausted. You spent most of the night standing watch, didn't you?" I give her a small, defeated laugh. "What can I say? Old habits are hard to shake."
"You prattle on about me needing rest, then turn around and disregard your own advice."
She accepts a bowl of boiled grain from one of the wastelanders, then turns her stern gaze back to me. "That isn't very rangerly of you." I raise an eyebrow. Rangerly? She shrugs. A figure of speech. You rangers are supposed to be all about honor and fulfilling your oaths. You forget that I'm still technically an apprentice. I'm no more a ranger than you are. I'm surprised at the bitterness that enters my voice. Since finding out that Elias is a nightingale, and with the near constant running and fighting, completing my ranger training has been low on my priority list. Zara gives me a concerned look, then turns her attention to her breakfast. Clearing my throat, I change the subject. We should reach Forest Hill before nightfall. Then, hopefully, we'll be better equipped for our journey. Some warm clothes will do us all good, I think. I'd rather have a bath, she sighs, glancing wistfully down at her half-eaten bowl of mush. It feels like ages since I've had a good scrubbing, or a brush to untangle my hair. I feel like an urchin, all road dust and snarls. I think you look beautiful, I reply, but she only gives me a flat stare. Don't patronize me, she says before taking another bite. Rangers aren't supposed to lie, apprentice or not. I smile sheepishly and hold up my hands. It's the truth. She rolls her eyes. Regardless. I'm happy that we're almost back to town. It'll be nice to enjoy the comforts of civilization again. While we still can, I think, but I keep that dark thought to myself. Zara looks around at the camp. They're still wearing their collars. I frown and shovel in a spoonful of porridge. Hmm? The Wastelanders, she says, is still wearing their collars. They must not know how to remove them, even though they're free. That, or they don't want to. I'm sure that they do, she says, and I can hear the stern undercurrent in her tone. Those collars are degrading, a symbol of their captivity, and they can't be very comfortable to wear. I shrug. It's all they've ever known, Zara. I know. She moves her partially eaten meal around with her crude utensil, a look of concentration on her face. Perhaps I can help remove them. Mage fire would probably do the trick, but it also might burn them. You'll have better luck with blacksmith tools, I remark. Blacksmith tools? Yeah. All you'd need to do is remove the hinge pin and they'd fall right off. Much less dangerous that way. Her expression turns thoughtful. That's a really good idea, Owen. I grin. I have them from time to time. We finish our meal with the others, then continue our journey through the forest, slogging through miles of snow and icy terrain. The old game trails are right where I remember them, twisting through the woods in dizzying fashion, and I find it surprisingly easy for me to navigate them despite the wintry conditions. As the day wears on, the temperature seems to rise above that which is normal for this time of year. Snow thins to muddy slush, and the icicles hanging from the limbs of trees glisten and drip in the sunlight. Zara believes it's a side effect of the Ark disappearing, and that the desert climate of the wastelands will eventually overtake Tarsinium. Something about that disturbs me, but I try not to let my discomfort show. I've spent my recent years closely associated with nature. The thought of losing the vibrant forests and green fields of my home makes my stomach turn. It's late afternoon by the time we finally reach Forest Hill, the muddy, winding trails leading to familiar roads and more developed country. Farmhouses dot the forested land, and soon the great hill itself is within sight. The Wastelanders are amazed to see the structures, confounded by the permanent buildings crafted of timber and stone. Just wait until you see Tarsis, I think wryly. Something feels off as we approach the town. Many of the homes stand dark and abandoned, and little few have smoke rising from their chimneys. Those that do have their barns and doors thrown open, farmers scurrying about with bundles of supplies. The road appears well used, with footprints and wagon ruts marring the icy mud. Confused, I begin to wonder why most of the town is deserted. The answer comes when we arrive at the base of the hill. Carts loaded with food and personal items fill the unpaved streets, people rushing madly about trying to load them with as many supplies as possible. Horses are saddled, and animals are led haphazardly along the road eastward, crowded with the fleeing denizens of Forest Hill.
Light almighty,
Zara murmurs, coming to stand beside me.
This looks like an exodus.
Yeah, I reply, watching as a mother explains to her weeping children that their kittens won't be able to travel with them. We need to figure out what's going on. Perhaps Governor Pryor will have some answers, if he's still here.
We should leave the Wastelanders outside of town, Zara says, looking about nervously. I don't think that they'll be welcome here.
Sure enough, the townsfolk give our caravan a wide berth. Many shoot suspicious looks at the Wastelanders, some glaring in outright hostility. The freed slaves, with their tanned skin and plain but foreign clothing, stand out from the locals, their expressions fearful as they stare gapingly at their surroundings.
All right, I say, pointing due west. There's an empty field out that way they can use. We'll set up camp there and tell them to wait for us. Then we'll go to the governor's mansion.
Zara nods and relays the message to our nervous companions, motioning for them to follow me. I lead them through the woods to a wide field which used to belong to one of the farmers who was killed in the Battle of Forest Hill. The Wastelanders unburden themselves of their supplies, looking mildly relieved as they begin setting up camp. Yari and the youths approach Zara and me as we depart, spears shouldered as if to escort us to the top of the hill. I give Zara a look, then explain that I need them here guarding the women and children. She translates. They seem disappointed, but ultimately agree in their tongue to watch over the camp while we're away. Clasping each on the shoulder, I thank them and leave with Zara, traveling through the trees and back to the road leading into town. As we make our way to the governor's manor, I see more of what we had before. Buildings stand with their windows and doors hanging open, while folks scramble about, loading wagons in preparation for departure. We catch the eyes of several people, their faces flickering with recognition, though no one stops to say hello. While passing the inn, however, an enthusiastic voice calls out to us.
"Owenland! Light, is that you?"
I turn to see the innkeeper's wife waving excitedly from the porch, a broom held in her other hand. "Mrs. Ellis," I answer, grinning, glad to see a familiar and welcoming face.
"It's great to see you. How have you been?"
She waddles down the steps and pulls me into a bone-crushing hug.
"I've been fine, dear. Light, save me, it's you I've been worried about. The world's gone mad, and you look like you haven't seen a proper bed in weeks."
She releases me, then notices Zara, embracing her as well.
"And the young mage is with you. Zara, was it? I'm so glad both of you are safe, if a little underfed."
She releases Zara, who looks more than a little dazed, and turns her attention back to me.
"What's going on here, Mrs. Ellis? It looks like everyone is leaving."
Her expression falls, lips tightening into a thin line on her round face.
"It's because they are, dear. Rumors have been running rampant. First the great explosion coming from Tarsus, then folk from the outlying farms are saying the Ark has simply vanished. It's got people in a panic. Everyone's afraid the demons will be coming to our doorstep any day now. They're running to the center of the kingdom for safety."
Zara and I share a concerned look.
"That's certainly going to complicate things. If this is happening in Forest Hill, it's bound to be happening in other towns as well."
"Wait a tick. Where's Elias?"
Mrs. Ellis looks around as if expecting to see him hiding nearby.
"I've half a mind to box his ears, up and leaving our inn without so much as a goodbye."
I open my mouth to respond, then simply shrug, unable to find an explanation.
"It's kind of a long story." "Well, I'd love to hear it over supper. Perhaps even a warm mug of spiced wine." "James!" she shouts, looking to the open door of the inn. "Owen and Zara have returned. Add some logs to the hearth and bring up that shank of beef from the cellar."
"That's a very kind offer," Zara says diplomatically. "But we need to speak with the governor first. Perhaps later we can talk."
Mrs. Ellis heaves a sigh.
"If you say so, though I doubt you'll find him to be much help. We'll have supper ready for you when you get back."
She pauses, then smiles at us, her demeanor growing warm once again.
It's so nice to see the two of you again. I really have been so worried about you."
We say our farewells and continue up the hill, dodging horse-drawn wagons on our way to the governor's manor. When we arrive, we find it strangely vacant. Nobody from the town waits for supplication, as well as it seems oddly devoid of any servants bustling about. Zara knocks on the front door, and together we wait for a reply. Nothing happens. Frowning, I loudly pound the dense wood with my fist. Again, no answer.
"Maybe we should see if he's down among the townspeople," Zara suggests.
I shake my head. Prior considers himself above the common folk, even if he'd never admitted himself. In the months I've lived here, I've never known him to mingle with the people of Forest Hill. He must be inside somewhere. I open the door, despite Zara's protests, and step inside the gaudy house, hand straying toward my manticore quill dagger just in case. Zara reluctantly follows, muttering to herself and pulling the door shut behind her. The manor is just as I remember it, with soft carpets, expensive woodwork, and rich decor adorning the walls. It appears to be empty, abandoned like many of the other structures in town, but nothing inside seems to be out of place. Our footsteps cause the floorboards to creak ominously, and the usual scents of freshly cleaned laundry and baking bread are mysteriously absent. Something scuffles in the cellar, and I fall into a crouch, pulling out my dagger as I cautiously approach the door to the stairs.
"There's someone down there," I whisper.
"What are you talking about?" she replies softly. "I didn't hear anything."
There it is again. My ears pick up a faint groaning sound from the floor below. "Stay here," I mouth at Zara before opening the door and creeping down the stairs. The cellar is starkly furnished compared to the floors above, lit only by a thin ray of sunlight coming from a window near the ceiling. Casks of ale are stacked against the far wall along with sacks of grain and other types of dry food. A layer of dust covers everything in a light gray film. Staying on the steps, I scan the wide, dim area for any signs of danger, but relax when I discover the source of the sound. Lying in the middle of the floor is Governor Pryor, snoring softly amid a half-dozen empty bottles. Even from the far side of the room, I can smell the sickly, sweet aroma of fine wine.
"Zara!" I call up, replacing my weapon on my belt. "Come down here. Everything's fine."
Upon seeing the drunken governor, she lets out a small, exasperated huff.
"Oh, for light's sake!"
We descend the staircase and approach the rotund nobleman, who smells even worse up close. His rich clothing is stained and rumpled, his bald head resting on the bare stone, and his chubby hands cradling a half-empty bottle. Using my boot, I give him a gentle nudge.
"Governor, it's me, Owen Lund. It's time to wake up."
He groans and blinks blearily, craning his neck to peer up at me.
"Apprentice? What are you doing here?"
His speech is slurred, and after a few seconds, he rests his head back on the ground, squeezing his eyes shut.
"That's not important," I reply, feeling my patience slipping away. "What's important is that you get off the ground and start leading your people." "She left me," he mumbles, drool oozing out of the corner of his mouth.
"You bet. She took the children to stay with her sister in Tarsus. Said it wasn't safe here. Told her I couldn't abandon my post. Needed to stay, or else the king."
He trails off and brings the half-empty bottle to his lips. Taking a slurping drink that doesn't seem to go down right, he descends into a fit of coughing.
"This is pathetic," Zara mutters, crossing her arms. "Just look at him."
Squatting, I yank the bottle out of his grasp and toss it to the other side of the room. Then I pull him into a sitting position. This proves no easy task, and I have to strain to move his enormous weight. Finally, he settles on his rear, blinking bloodshot eyes at the faint sunlight now resting on his face.
"Listen, Governor," I say sternly. "The Arc of Radiance has fallen, and that means war will soon be upon us. Right now there's an enormous demonic army coming this way, and the only hope we have is to stand together at the capital city. Do you understand?"
Pryor screws his face up in a comically questioning way, his cheeks bright red from the wine.
What are you talking about?
I snarl, jabbing my finger into his soft chest. We need to get these people out of here now. Most have already fled, but they've probably left a lot of provisions behind. If anyone remains in Forest Hill, they'll be dead within the week. A flash of clarity enters the governor's expression, and he finally seems to understand. He gazes up at me slack-jawed.
Demons, you say? God preserve us.
There's little time for dawdling, governor, Zara interjects, her voice brimming with impatience. You need to get yourself cleaned up and speak with the people, those who are left anyway. We can help. He nods dazedly, then tries unsuccessfully to get to his feet. Settling back on his haunches, he breathes,
Please, just give me a moment. Then I'll go with you to address the town.
Probably best to wash up and change your clothes first, she suggests. Wouldn't be good for you to speak to them while stinking of wine. He opens his mouth to retort, then sighs instead.
You're probably right. All right, then. Help me up, my boy. We have a town to save.
Grimacing at the smell, I pull Pryor to his feet, then walk with him up the stairs. Drunken fool, I think, lending him my arm for support. The world's crashing down around us, and he turns to the bottle. I certainly hope things are better in Tarsus. Light knows that we need some strong leadership. Now more than ever.